Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report featuring Jim McKinney and myself, to an extent, Big Al. We're going to talk about a number of topics in our four segments today. In the first segment, we're going to talk about the interview that Tucker Carlson did with the chief of the Capitol Police. Very, very telling, and I have also posted that video under today's date. Jimmy, let's hear about it.
So this is a very interesting story. So what we're beginning to see now is that Tucker Carlson interviewed Chief Stevenson. And we did a daily editorial a little bit about this just recently, but there's more to the story. So he did that. Tucker Carlson did it on Fox Nation. He did that interview while he was still working for Fox. He was preparing to broadcast that interview. Now, this is with the chief of Capitol Police, Stevenson, on January 6th. And he had been the chief of police since 2019.
Right.
And he'd been a D.C. federal there in Washington for over 30 years. Very professional guy. So what happened, there's two parts of the story. The first one is, apparently, Fox executives, it's being reported by some people, that Fox executives wanted to see the video before Tucker broadcast the video. And now, Stevenson, Chiefson, he's actually published a book that explains all the issues. So people knew that there was some issues going on, but Fox executives demanded that they see the video before Tucker Carlson broadcast it.
And what was it, Jimmy? Just one quick question. It doesn't make any sense. Well, it does make sense from a corporate structure standpoint. What do you feel was the rationale for the Fox folks not wanting that to go out until they blessed it?
Well, I think what they're afraid of is that they are showing that it shows, the interview showed some nefarious activities with key members of Congress, both Republican and Democrat, that created a bigger disaster from January 6th.
Right.
And so I believe, this is my speculation, that Fox News was afraid it would embarrass certain members, possibly people like Paul Ryan, possibly people like Mitch McConnell. Paul Ryan, because he's an executive at Fox, and of course Fox News, remember, called the election early and is part of the conspiracy, in my view, to change the outcome of the election in 2020. And so I think it's a damning interview. And when you see the interview, well, let me finish what happened. So Tucker would not allow Fox News to review it. He was fired that Friday night. So Friday they wanted it. He wasn't gonna, he was going to broadcast it on Monday. They fired him that night. Now, we do not know if that's the full reason why they were firing him, but this is a very, very high probability that it had to do with this interview. So what Tucker Carlson did, and what was released on Friday, the 11th of August, is another interview. He asked Chiefson to come back into his studio now, outside of Fox News, and redo the interview with more information.
Right.
And in that interview, Stevenson basically outlines with factual evidence the efforts by key individuals inside Congress and inside the executive branch, including the military and intelligence community, to withhold information that might have helped them make better decisions, but more importantly, withheld support for security of the Capitol. To a point where they could actually get more video of more violence and let the crowd go wild. And he makes a very, very compelling argument that there was something very nefarious happening on January 6th.
I want you to speculate a little bit and tell our audience what you think that was, the nefarious act.
So
go ahead.
Jim. Go ahead. Now, I'm not going to speculate. I'm going to repeat the facts that he provided. And those facts that he provided were, he did not, even up until the day before and the day of, he did not know there was intelligence reporting that there would be intense violence at the Capitol. He had the Capitol Police have their own intelligence liaison unit that actually works with the joint intelligence agencies through Washington, D.C. Different agencies withheld information, and it's turned out that they knew that there was going to be more violence, that they had information there was going to be violence, but they withheld it from the Capitol Police chief. And he does not understand why they would do that unless there's some other nefarious reasons behind
right.
it. And we can, and look, we know what happened with the video teams. We know that Nancy Pelosi's daughter had a video team with Nancy Pelosi throughout the day. We know that a lot of different media outlets hyped this issue incredibly strongly, and it was used and manipulated to create the circumstances of basically alienating an entire segment of our population that were frustrated with the outcome of the 2020 election and have very serious questions. So Chief Sun, as he talks through this, he explains how he requested, when he saw things going south on January 6th in the morning, he requested from federal agencies and the Sergeant-at-Arms in the House and the Sergeant-at-Arms in the Senate for federal support, that there were actually a few hundred National Guard very close, within like visual distance of the Capitol, but they would not be released because when he requested it, the Sergeant-at-Arms had to get approval. He said he had to get approval. He did not need approval. He had to get approval from Nancy Pelosi, and the next Sergeant-at-Arms in the Senate had to get approval, said they had to get approval from Mitch McConnell, who was at the time the leader of the Senate.
Right.
They did not give approval. And there's established procedures in Washington for that response. In an emergency situation, they could authorize it, but they did not. And they withheld that support for National Guard to come in and help calm the problem for over an hour, which allowed a lot more violence and a lot more things to escalate. And, of course, he's been very, very upset about it. And, of course, the accusations that for some reason they were at fault because he was immediately relieved from his position after the event.
Right.
The deputy Capitol Police Chief was promoted up, and she had been working directly with Nancy Pelosi's office. So the Sergeant of Arms was very close to Nancy Pelosi. These are facts. Did not give authority to bring in additional support and waited for a long period of time, which created a more violent circumstance, a more violent situation for the media.
You know, pretty well thought out, I have to say. A lot of the actions that are leading up to what I call the tipping point, what I mean by that specifically is I think political events and societal opinions are going to go in the direction of the conservatives now. Without offending the progressives listening to this show, I would have to say that I think that they're probably going to change their minds about what's going on in this country. You know, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I don't want to give Mark Milley and the Department of Defense a break on this as well, because apparently they had very specific information of potential violence, had algorithmic data mining that showed a significant potential problem. They withheld information and actually put out a memo that restricted the National Guard from being available, even though they knew that this was going to happen. And they are the backup response for the Capitol Police. Yeah. And this, again, shows a level of corruption and coordination between Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, Mark Milley, and key individuals on both sides of the aisle in order to undermine the Trump administration and alienate voters in America that actually want to see a change in Washington.
Yeah, boy, I have to tell you, it is almost an unwinnable contest when you have everybody in government against you, as Donald Trump does right now. However, in spite of that, he is still leading in the poll, and it'll be very interesting to see how this comes out. Stick around, you guys. Better take a break for a commercial. We're going to be right back with you.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with the KE Political Report featuring my buddy Jim McKinney. We're going to talk a little bit about term limits. We're going to bring up some examples which actually prove the necessity to make this a much more efficient environment. Now, obviously, you're talking about Dianne Feinstein. You're talking about Nancy Pelosi. I believe in this world, in this environment, you're also talking about Joe Biden, and you're certainly talking about Mitch McConnell. The future of our country rests right now because of their positions and power in the hands of these people, and I think that's wrong. We have talked about this both off mic and on mic. This has to change. Jimmy, you want to elaborate?
Yeah, so we, in the last segment, we talked about what Nancy Pelosi had done and what Mitch McConnell had done or not done that actually exacerbated the problems with January 6th and created conditions that I believe they thought that these older controlling politicians in the Uniparty thought that somehow that when they were doing this that they would be able to intimidate and alienate people. And basically push people away from Donald Trump. But it's really never been about Donald Trump. It's about frustration with what happens in Washington when the senior, very old leaders think they know better than the rest of the population.
Right.
And that's the frustration. And what you're seeing with Nancy Pelosi, what you're seeing with Mitch McConnell, what you've seen with Chuck Schumer, you can name these long-term, you know, Dianne Feinstein, you mentioned these long-term senators or congresspeople that actually have been in so long, they've completely disconnected from the populations that they're supposed to represent back in the states. And because of that, they understand how things work in Washington. They control and manipulate. And they do that because they get the resources from corporations, from the lobbyists, from the different organizations that they've, you know, tied themselves to.
Yeah.
And the only way, and I, you know, there's an argument for longevity in the Senate and the House, right? And that argument has been in the past that they get to know it and they'll represent their districts better and they will, you know, because of that expertise, they'll be able to be more efficient. But I think that is an absolute crock anymore. I used to think that was a possibility, but the reality is they get so disconnected from their populations. They get so disconnected from actual anything outside of the Washington Beltway, and that includes, you know, the information they get from Washington Post and the New York Times and the different network news is that they respond to.
Yeah.
They get so disconnected, and they've been there so long that they actually no longer represent anybody except for the government inside the institutions in Washington. And that's why it's got to change. You need to have my recommendation now is 2 terms in the Senate maximum and 8 years in the House maximum.
Okay.
That would be 4 terms maximum in the House. And I would say that even possibly 6 terms in the House.
Well, I think that makes sense because that way you're going to get...
Correction, 6 years, not 6 terms. Let me correct that.
Yeah, you're going to get fresh ideas, number one, and I think a lot of the corruption is going to be eliminated because with what the system you're talking about right now, Jimmy, it's virtually impossible to instill corruption if you only have... If you don't have the good old boys in there anymore.
Yeah, and one thing that many people do not understand, and this is important to actually realize how Washington works.
Yeah.
The elected officials are basically, they're just talking heads. The staffers, the people that are hired and that basically are connected with the political parties and with the apparatus in Washington, they're the ones that do all the work. They're the ones that do the research. They're the ones that write the talking points. They're these staffers that each one of these congressional offices have, they direct the future of the country. The politicians are only the talking heads.
I agree.
And understanding that has to change, that you've got to do something to stop the influence from outside Washington, I shouldn't say outside Washington, outside of the people's understanding of what's happening. Meaning, you've got to stop. Let me just give the example. So if I call my congressman or senator, okay, maybe because I was in the military, or maybe because, you know, we do the show or something, they may listen to me, but highly unlikely. If you're just a person that's angry about your, you know, what's going on in your neighborhood or about the violence and the crime, and you call your senator, your congressman, they could care less. They don't listen to you. Who they do listen to are the big corporations that provide big donations.
Right.
And they, you know, they hire people. They have a lot of people within a district or something like that. So, you know, they do listen to them, and they'll answer the phone for them. They're not going to answer the phone for me or, you know, the lady down the street who's angry. But they will answer the phone for the big money. Something has to change to where people actually are more responsive to their constituents and less responsive to the big influences out there that are controlling basically the information in the media and, of course, the direction of the nation for the benefit of big money.
Well, money talks. We all know that. But I agree with you 100%, Jim. If you're going to have an efficient government that is lacking some of the BS that's going on right now, you have to put an environment like this in place, Jimmy. There's no question about it.
Yeah, you know, Al, and I think another thing that has to happen is, okay, 95% of the people inside the Beltway vote Democratic, right? And that's, you know, local people that live there, some of the more, I would say, financially difficult areas in Anacostia, the kind of urban problem areas, but also inside Washington's more elite areas, you know, near Georgetown and of course, in downtown D.C. And those people are very incredibly wealthy, but they're also very connected to the Democratic Party. And they don't see things from outside of Washington, D.C., and they are quite happy because they're usually very well protected because, on one side of the street or, you know, if you're on one side of the river, you're pretty well off. If you're on the other side of the river in southeast Washington, it's a disaster. It's a nightmare. And they keep voting in the same local authorities. But bottom line is they're beholden to the Democratic Party.
Yes, they are. I don't think it's as high as the number you gave, though. And Jim, we got to take a break here pretty quick for the top of the hour news. But I have to say, would you comment again on, you said 90% of people vote.
94%, 94% actually vote Democratic in D.C.
Oh, in
those are facts.
In D.C. Okay, all right, I'll buy that.
Yeah. Okay. So they're disconnected from the rest of America.
You bet.
They do not understand people out in what they call the flyover states.
Yeah, no, I understand totally. Jimmy, got to take a break. We're right up to the wall right now. Stick around. We're going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Back. Hope you enjoyed the top of the hour news that all of our affiliate stations, those being the stations that carry this program. We have a couple of new ones, by the way. We've got a station in Oregon, east of the mountains, located right on Interstate 5. And we have a new station. We want to thank the managers at each one of these stations for carrying this great show. We have a station in Oklahoma that is now carrying this show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We appreciate it. And we want to add that we hope that the listeners of this station join our blog and make their comments as to how they feel about the issues that we talk about. Going to talk a little bit about this segment, within this segment, about a video that we can direct you to that Ben Shapiro just put out, has to do with directing people's opinions and censorship. Jim, can you explain?
Yeah, so this is a very ironic situation. And, of course, similar to the Tucker issue we talked about in the first segment, where Fox News censored him because it would probably highlight something negative, yeah. Ben Shapiro did a very interesting piece, a very specific fact-based piece on video talking about the WEF, the World Economic Forum, and their relationship in developing a partnership with the World Federation of Advertisers, and that group organizing and putting together an organization called the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, or GARM. And these globalist agendas actually control about 90% of all advertising dollars in the world. And and every major corporation you could think of, including ABC, Disney, ABBEV, you know, the people that own Anheuser-Busch, Gillette, all the famously woke big global corporations are involved in this, in these organizations, in both the WEF and then the World Federation of Advertisers. And this group, the GARM, the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, is actually putting together what they call a brand safety suitability framework. And that actually dictates what things that they will advertise and what media will be allowed to get advertising dollars within these organizations. What is now, this is the ironic part about it. This is factual. All the information here is from their websites and from the way they operate. But immediately, of course, some of the big funders and the people that are involved in these are the internet organizations like Facebook, who owns Instagram, and Google, who controls YouTube. YouTube immediately demonetized Ben Shapiro's video that outlined what they're doing to control the agenda and control knowledge and advertising dollars that keep you from seeing different information that might be contrary to the objectives of these different organizations. How ironic is that, Al?
It's not ironic. It is truly, truly 1984 type censorship.
You know, Ayn Rand, for those who haven't read The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged, I think most people should read them.
Of course.
She outlines exactly how organizations, fellowships, these partnerships, and basically guilds, unions, take control and influence people and undermine the basic foundations of our Constitution and our government. In those books, I think they're very, very important for people to read. And what you're seeing here is a move towards globalization, a fascist, if you will, control of information in order to protect ideologies and not highlight the level of insidious control that these companies want to have over your minds and what you see and what you don't see.
Is there any way in your mind, Jim, that you can rationalize these actions? I mean, are these companies, and this is just kind of a general question, are these companies acting in good faith, what they think is good faith, towards our American society? I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I think whenever you're talking about a global corporation, their objective is to maximize their returns, right?
Right.
Exactly, their profit. And when they do that, if there's not a framework of honesty or morality based on a sovereign national control.
Yeah.
So in the United States, in the past, basically the companies that have made a fortune, Facebook, Google, Ford, GM, Alcoa, these companies that have made a fortune by selling to the global markets, they were working inside a framework of the United States Constitution that required transparency, that required freedom of speech, that required a level of authority and regulation that kept them from going overboard. When you talk about globalized corporations, when you talk about getting external of these sovereign national entities, then what do you have? You have associations or groups like the World Economic Forum that set up parameters, or the World Trade Organization. They no longer look at sovereignty or a moral high ground. They are able, these global corporations are able to create their own governance, and they can sidestep whatever they are required to do in order to maximize their profits, which is exactly why they push things like open borders, because they want free movement of labor to be able to, you know, for basically for workers to be able to move anywhere for their benefit. They look at the free movement of capital through like digital currency, because then they can transfer without costs a digital currency and make money based on the movement of their money without having to pay transaction fees or a difference in a trade in the valuation of a particular currency. So those are the types of agendas they push. That's why they're pushing them. And when they're external to a moral or an ethical code that is driven by a sovereign nation, then they're able to gain much power. And that's what you're seeing now is the result of a movement of globalization and these organizations like the World Economic Forum, where very powerful, rich people think they know better than everybody else, but ultimately what they're trying to do is maximize their own returns and income and actually cut out competition. They're trying to kill competition.
Jim, let me ask you a question, and this is very important. We got about 2 minutes left here. My question is, how does this type of action on the part of these companies, how does it maximize their revenues?
Well, again, so there's two different pushes here. One, the ability, what we just talked about, right? So putting in policies in place where they influence governments to appease their needs. And when they've got so much money, when you have a company that's worth $500 or $600 billion, that's more than most countries' GDP.
Yeah.
So they can dictate, they'll reach in and lobby and influence politicians in order to get policies within that area and that region that they can operate more efficiently or cost effectively or buy off corruptly, pay off leaders. And then with that power, they are able to expand markets. And so that's how it benefits them, through the lobbying effort, but also controlling the information so people don't question it. So people like Ben Shapiro don't post these videos that open others' eyes and say, what the heck is going on?
Right.
They want to stop that, and that's what they're working towards.
Jimmy, give me a real quick summary in 15 seconds about you, what you were just talking about. Give our listeners that real quick summary.
Bottom line is the World Economic Forum, through the World Federation of Advertising, is controlling 90% of what you see through advertising dollars, because people can't afford to put information out there without actually getting paid for it. And that's, they're controlling that dollar.
Right, and there you go. We'll be right back. Here to wrap up KER Politics, we're going to do this with what we feel are two very pertinent and interesting subjects. One has to do with the World Economic Forum, and the other one has to do with, the financial condition of America. You look at the deficit, and all I can say about the deficit here is if the local church on the corner had financial statements similar to those of the United States of America, the preacher in that church would no longer be preaching on Sundays, because he wouldn't have the funds to keep the doors open. Jimmy?
Yeah, so the numbers are staggering. So far, for the first 10 months of this fiscal year, remember that runs from October through the end of September, the budget gap was over $1.6 trillion. And that's higher than the $1.375 trillion deficit in all of fiscal 2022, all of last year. And this is according to the monthly Treasury statement. The reason why is because they're spending more. The government is spending more than they expected, and the revenues are lower, which is obviously an indicator of more economic shortfalls. Unbelievable numbers and absolutely unsustainable numbers.
Okay, the other thing we're going to be talking about very briefly is the subject of a daily editorial that we're going to be doing here concerning the World Economic Forum. Going to put that up early afternoon today.
Yeah, I think we'll do a little bit of piece, a little more detail on World Economic Forum and their influence. And of course, you know, it's hard to judge exactly what's happening there with the World Economic Forum and how much influence they have over the rest of the world, but it's growing, and we know that a number of people like Justin Trudeau, people like Merkel in Germany, a lot of global leaders in the world are connected with the World Economic Forum, and we know, we talked previously about this advertising and the amount of revenues and what controls information out there. So this is really important, and one thing that nobody is really talking about is actually what's happening in the U.S. economy. So the 12-month rolling deficit, right, the 12-month rolling deficit is still, now we talked, well, the numbers I just gave you are actually for the first 10 months with $1.6 trillion. We're talking about a $2 trillion 12-month rolling deficit. And we're borrowing $5.3 billion a day. And we know that inflation, this reporting period that we just had this week, no one's really talking about it, but it is up again, when in fact the Biden administration, the White House, have been talking about how they've been reducing inflation. But the consumer price index is up a slightly bit, I think by 0.2 points. And I think the core inflation rate's hovering around 4.7. These are still very high, because that's compounded over the last 2.5 years, where we saw at some points 9% and higher inflation. So these are very, very significant problems facing the U.S. economy right now. And as we have seen in just the last 2 weeks, a significant rise in energy costs once again. You absolutely can guarantee that inflation is going to pop back up for a period of time. And the hilarious thing from my perspective is the Democratic attempt to label the economic, positive economic news as Biden economics. Bidenomics.
Yeah, Bidenomics.
Bidenomics. You're hearing it all the time. And what is hilarious to me is it's somewhat reflective of what was called Reaganomics in the 80s.
Right.
Yeah. Now, Why did Democrats themselves start labeling Reaganomics back in the 80s? They were trying to be negative. They were trying to undermine Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Trickle-down economics, Reaganomics. These were all issues that they were using. And of course, over time, in the 40 years since Reagan's role, you know, in basically turning our economy around after Jimmy Carter and, you know, years problems. They're trying to equate Bidenomics with something like Reaganomics. What a dumb move. What a dumb move.
Well, because I got to interrupt you and just say this. The dumb moves that the liberals are putting out right now are too numerous to talk about in the time we have left.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, we can talk about them all day long.
Yeah.
But what is really interesting to me, though, is, look, we are not doing better. We are, you know, they talk about massive job increases. Well, what they forget to say is that we had a massive job decrease because of the COVID situation that they helped facilitate, if not make. And that created a huge shortage. So we really haven't. The number of jobs that Biden has created in his time in office through the same period is nowhere near what Trump had done during his time in office in a similar equivalent period of time. So these, when you look at apples to apples, the prognosis is very bad, and most people understand it because all the polling shows a significant fear of economic future.
I agree 1,000%. I want to give people, our listeners, I guess I should say, a bit of very friendly advice. The best source of economic numbers that I have found probably in the last year is the Kiplinger newsletter. Kiplinger puts out a newsletter typically on the front page. It comes out of Washington, D.C., and typically on the front page, they have prognostications dealing with inflation, dealing with GNP, dealing with GDP, dealing with employment numbers, and these numbers, near as I can tell, are about as close to correct as anything.
Yeah, well, that's good information for people to take a look. I'd recommend looking at that and also taking a look at other options, anything you can. But if you again, because information is being controlled right now, and it's very hard to find accurate information or unfiltered information on the internet because of exactly what we talked about earlier, these organizations that control knowledge and information and advertising dollars and what is allowed to be advertised and what's not. If you put up some sort of leftist offensive articles, you are significantly downgraded in credibility, which means you don't get advertising dollars. So, we don't, and most of these, organizations that try to be honest right now, if they're honest, they're actually highlighting the weaknesses in many things, foreign policy, economy, the border, crime. And of course, they get downgraded, and those companies don't get revenues. And unfortunately, that controls the market, and that includes Murdoch-owned industries, like Wall Street Journal and New York Post,
right,
and Fox News.
You bet.
We're living in a dystopian future right now that is controlled by a very small handful of very powerful and financially corrupt individuals that control politicians and control information, and watching the inability of media to actually question some of the unbelievable things that Joe Biden says publicly because they're afraid that they'll lose advertising dollars, and their editors say, no, you can't do it. This is crazy. We're living in a bizarre world right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's more than a little bizarre. It's a lot bizarre. Jimmy, I'm going to let you wrap up the show today. We are down to 1 minute left, almost exactly.
Yeah, so the things that I think that are really, of course, we're recording the show on Friday the 11th, and it'll be, broadcast on Saturday night or late Friday night around the country. What we're seeing right now is that Merrick Garland just came out and announced that David Weiss, the prosecutor from Delaware, has now been appointed a special prosecutor to continue with the Hunter Biden investigation. That is a complete cover-up from Merrick Garland because they had restricted David Weiss from actually doing certain things, and we don't know what he's going to do anyway because he's too connected to the Democratic Party.
Right.
But my belief is that this is just a stalling mechanism. We see the judge in the Washington court. She actually allowed Trump to speak on certain levels but couldn't talk about sensitive materials from the grand jury indictment information, even though the grand jury indictment information has been very ugly, in a very ugly manner, been left out.
Right. Okay, so you guys, unfortunately, I got to cut Jimmy off. There you have it. It's been really fun putting the show together this week and researching it. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.